Welcome to Listen 2. This is Ted. The news was published on Monday, September 30th. Today, we're joined by Eric and Kate to discuss inflammation. Let's dive right in. What exactly is inflammation, and why is it such a hot topic right now?
Well, Ted, inflammation is basically our body's SOS signal. It's like the immune system's version of a fire alarm. When something's not right, whether it's an injury, infection, or even just stress, our body sounds the alarm by triggering inflammation. It's become a buzzword lately because, let's face it, everyone's looking for the next health villain to blame. But it's not that simple.
I'm sorry, but that's a massive oversimplification. Inflammation isn't just some benign alert system. It's a complex biological process that can wreak havoc on our
Hold on a second, Kate. I wasn't finished. Yes, inflammation is complex, but we can't ignore its vital role in healing and protection. It's not all
Fine.
Doom and gloom.
But you can't gloss over the serious risks of chronic inflammation. We're talking about a process that's linked to heart disease, cancer, and autoimmune disorders. It's not just a defensive mechanism. It's a potential ticking time bomb in many people's bodies.
You both raise interesting points. Can you explain the difference between acute and chronic inflammation for our listeners?
Absolutely, Ted. Think of acute inflammation as a quick targeted response. It's like calling the fire department for a small kitchen fire. It shows up, does its job, and leaves. You'll notice redness, swelling, maybe some pain, but it's all part of the healing process. So this type usually lasts a few days to a couple of weeks.
On the flip side, chronic inflammation is like having a slow-burning fire in your walls that you can't see or smell. It can smolder for months or even years without you noticing. But all that time, it's quietly damaging your body. The tricky part is, you might not have any obvious symptoms until serious health problems develop.
That's a bit of an exaggeration, Kate. Not everyone with low-grade inflammation is going to develop a serious disease. Many people live with some level of inflammation without
any major health. Oh, come on, Eric. That's incredibly irresponsible to say. Chronic inflammation is a significant risk factor for numerous health problems. Just because not everyone develops severe disease doesn't mean we should
ignore it. Let's discuss the potential causes of chronic inflammation. What factors contribute to this long-term inflammatory state?
Well, Ted, a lot of it comes down to lifestyle choices. You know, the usual suspects, poor diet, lack of exercise, chronic stress. It's like constantly throwing fuel on that inflammatory fire. But the good news is these are things we can control and change.
That's oversimplifying a complex issue, Eric. It's not just about personal choices. We're swimming in a sea of environmental toxins. Our modern lifestyles mess with our circadian rhythms. And don't even get me started on what industrial food production
Hold up, Kate.
Is doing to
While those
gut.
Factors may play a role, we can't discount personal responsibility. Individual choices still have the most significant impact on inflammation levels. People need to know they have
That's
the power
just victim
to...
blaming, Eric. Many people have limited control over their environment and exposure to inflammatory triggers. Not everyone can afford organic food or move away from polluted areas. We need to address these systemic issues. Not just tell people to eat more kale.
Let's look at inflammation from a historical perspective. Can you discuss a similar health concern from the past that parallels our current focus on inflammation?
Great question, Ted. The cholesterol panic of the late 20th century is a perfect comparison. Back then, cholesterol was the big bad wolf of health, kind of like how inflammation is viewed now. Everyone was freaking out about eggs and butter, thinking they were ticking time bombs for heart disease.
That's a completely flawed comparison, Eric. The science on inflammation is much more robust than early cholesterol research. We're not just guessing here. We have solid evidence linking chronic inflammation
Hold on, Kate.
To numerous...
The parallel I'm drawing is about public reaction, not the science itself. Just like people avoided all fats due to cholesterol fears, now they're cutting out entire food groups thinking they're inflammatory.
But that's missing the point entirely. We have solid, peer-reviewed evidence linking chronic inflammation to diseases like cancer, heart disease, and autoimmune disorders. This isn't just some health fad or misunderstood science.
How did the cholesterol panic unfold, and what lessons can we learn from it?
Well, Ted, it all kicked off in the 1960s and 70s when research started linking high cholesterol to heart disease. Suddenly, fat became public enemy number one. People were ditching eggs, avoiding avocados, and loading up on low-fat everything. It was like a nationwide fat phobia.
and that oversimplification caused real harm. People replaced fats with refined carbohydrates, thinking they were making healthy choices. In reality, they might have been worsening their health outcomes. It shows how dangerous it can be to oversimplify nutrition science.
Exactly my point, Kate. We're seeing a similar pattern with inflammation. People are making drastic dietary changes based on incomplete information or misunderstandings. They're cutting out foods that might actually be beneficial, all in the name of being anti-inflammatory.
But the difference is that we have much better science now. We're not just avoiding foods willy-nilly. We're promoting anti-inflammatory lifestyles based on solid research. It's about more than just diet. It's exercise, stress management.
I agree that we have better science, but that doesn't mean people aren't still misinterpreting it. We need to be careful about how we communicate this information to avoid another cholesterol.
How can we apply lessons from the cholesterol panic to our current understanding of inflammation?
The big takeaway, Ted, is that we need to be cautious about oversimplifying complex biological processes. Just like not all cholesterol is bad, we need HDL, the good cholesterol, not all inflammation is harmful. We shouldn't demonize a natural bodily process or make sweeping dietary recommendations based on limited understanding.
While I agree we shouldn't oversimplify, we also can't ignore the very real risks of chronic inflammation. We need to take it seriously while avoiding extreme measures. It's about finding a balance, promoting anti-inflammatory lifestyles without falling into fear-mongering or fad diets.
Looking to the future, how do you think our understanding and treatment of inflammation will evolve?
I believe we're heading towards a more nuanced, personalized approach. Instead of one-size-fits-all recommendations, we'll likely see strategies tailored to individual risk factors and genetic predispositions. It's like how we now have personalized cancer treatments, we'll have personalized inflammation management plans.
That's far too passive, Eric. We need aggressive public health measures to address the root causes of chronic inflammation. We can't just focus on individual treatments when there are systemic issues like environmental toxins and problematic food
industry
practices.
Whoa, slow down there, Kate. Aggressive measures often have unintended consequences. Remember how the war on fat led to an increase in sugar consumption? A gradual, evidence-based approach is more likely to be effective and sustainable in the long run.
But we don't have time for gradual changes. Chronic inflammation is contributing to a health crisis that needs immediate action. We can't sit around waiting for perfect evidence while people are suffering from inflammation-related diseases right now.
What specific developments do you anticipate in inflammation research and treatment?
Great question, Ted. I expect we'll see more targeted anti-inflammatory medications that don't suppress the entire immune system. That's crucial because we don't want to leave people vulnerable to infections. We'll also likely develop better biomarkers to identify chronic inflammation early before it causes significant damage. It's like having an early warning system for your body.
While those developments sound nice, we need to focus on prevention, not just treatment. I anticipate more research on how environmental factors influence inflammation, leading to stricter regulations on pollutants and food additives. We need to address the root causes.
Hold on, Kate. While prevention is important, we can't ignore the need for better treatments. Many people already suffer from inflammation-related conditions. They need help now, not just future prevention
strategies. But focusing solely on treatment is short-sighted, Eric. We need to address the societal factors that contribute to chronic inflammation. It's like trying to mop up a flooded room without turning off the faucet first. We need to tackle the source of the problem.
How do you think public understanding of inflammation will change in the coming years?
I'm hopeful we'll see a more balanced view, Ted. Ideally, people will understand both the benefits and risks of inflammation without falling for extreme claims or fad diets. It's about education and nuance, helping people see that inflammation isn't inherently good or bad, but a natural process that needs to be in balance.
That's not enough, Eric. We need a complete paradigm shift in how we think about health. Inflammation should be seen as a key factor in overall well-being, influencing everything from diet to urban planning. It's not just about individual understanding.
Now you're going too far, Kate. We should focus on educating people about concrete steps they can take to manage inflammation through lifestyle changes. Your approach is too broad and abstract to be
education
practical.
Isn't enough, Eric. We need systemic changes to create an environment that supports low inflammation levels for everyone, regardless of individual choices. It's about creating a world where the healthy choice is the easy choice.
Thank you both for this lively and informative discussion on inflammation. It's clear that this is a complex topic with many facets to consider. As we move forward, it seems balancing scientific understanding with practical applications will be key in addressing inflammation-related health concerns.